Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Of course, Afghanistan has been on the minds of folks for a while, and we've started hearing the term ISIS-K a lot. And I had to admit, even as someone who follows this stuff, I had no idea what ISIS-K was. Tom Mikaitis wrote about this on The Hill. Tom, thanks for hopping on with us today. I imagine I'm not alone, or listeners who have never heard of it are not alone, when they don't know what ISIS-K is.
No, that's absolutely correct. Most people assumed was that ISIS was, in fact, the Islamic State that operated in Syria and Iraq, which was definitely the case, and that was rolled up as the territory was liberated in 2019, the last remaining area, and al-Baghdadi, the self-proclaimed caliph, was killed by U.S. Special Forces. ISIS also existed as a network of cells, organizations, and affiliates, one of which was this group it set up in 2015 called ISIS in Khorasan Province, which is a kind of ancient regional term and includes parts, you know, much of Central Asia, including parts of Pakistan and Afghanistan, and that's the organization we're dealing with now.
I'm sure there's subtle differences between them, but is there anything overarching different between what we commonly know as ISIS and ISIS-K that would concern us?
Not really. It's think of it as, you know, in some ways it's useful to compare it to McDonald's. You have different franchises all over the country, but it's the same product. The difference would be, of course, who are the fighters. Most of these are drawn from Pakistan. Some are disaffected Taliban in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Some are from farther afield in Central Asia. A few may even be from the old core organization in Syria. But it's the same ideology. Ironically, they're more conservative than the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be a major problem for the Taliban once we leave, because they think the Taliban are essentially sold out by being focused solely on Afghanistan, and they think the Taliban allows for too much tribal and law and local custom, as opposed to just this overarching pure Sharia law, as they understand it,
right.
Of course. So.
Tom, by the way, is a professor of history at DePaul University. I didn't mention that off the top. And Tom, you hit on what I wanted to talk about next, is mm-hmm. the Taliban and ISIS-K. I think a lot of Americans kind of associate all terror organizations, or maybe even now, I guess, official governments of certain nations under one page. But as you've outlined there, Taliban and ISIS-K are enemies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that kind of underscores what we, when we hear the president, or there's a Pentagon briefing happening right now about the U.S. government essentially working with the Taliban, and that really upsets a lot of people. Is it a matter of you work with the people who have the same enemy as you, the ultimate enemy? I mean, I guess you can become not friends, but you have a common goal, I guess, against ISIS and ISIS-K.
Well, the term, the idea that we're working with the Taliban is, it's a bad choice of words and by the media, and of course it's exaggerated. What he meant was, in fact, there is a very temporary and extremely limited marriage of convenience that we want to evacuate as many people as possible. They want us out of Afghanistan as quickly as possible. So it's in both of our interests to cooperate to a very limited extent over the next couple of days. But unless the Taliban, and the president's also right, you remain engaged with your enemies. To try and improve the quality of life for those in Afghanistan, we're going to remain engaged, because we have frozen government assets that the Taliban desperately needs. They are, terribly short of cash, and it was one thing to fund an insurgency, quite another to run a government. And, there's a drought going on. 40% of people have food insecurity, so they really want international support, investment, and so on. And then that may give us some leverage to force them to moderate some of their more extreme positions. I'm not terribly optimistic about
right.
that. But, you know, it is at least something.
Yeah, and they're saying a lot of the right things now, but obviously the devil will be in the details after the United States is gone at the end of the day tomorrow. I wanted to ask, because we had a congressman on last week, a Republican congressman here in Illinois, talking about how one of the faults of the Biden administration has been the fact that the Taliban and terrorist organizations feared a President Trump, and they do not fear a President Biden. Does that play any role in what we see on the ground in Afghanistan or neighboring countries?
Absolutely not. It was President Trump who negotiated this withdrawal and did so without even involving the Afghan national government, and made the withdrawal almost unconditional. People don't realize that the takeover of territory outside the major cities began after the agreement was reached in February 2020, which, and by the way, the Trump administration pressured the Afghan government to release 5,000 Taliban who were incarcerated, and there was a ceasefire and so on. And it was very clear to the Taliban that he was determined to pull out regardless. And had he been reelected, we probably would have been out on May 1st, and it's hard to see how it would have played out any differently, except I think it's quite likely he would not have made the same effort to withdraw people. So the idea that they're afraid of him and not of Biden is not borne out by the evidence. And President Biden showed he's willing to strike back when he has to do that. I think the thing that he deserves credit for, and this was not flawless, this was very fraught with difficulties, and we can talk about that if you want, but he's standing by his decision and accepting responsibility for it, saying this war had to end at some point. And to continue to throw away lives and money on this after 20 years is not going to get us anything.
I wish we did have more time to talk today. I'm sure you'll be on with John again soon, or myself filling in. Tom Mikaitis, I really appreciate you stopping down, breaking this down for us a little bit here today.
Always happy to do it. You have a nice day.
Yeah, you too, for sure. Complicated issues. Appreciate having Professor of History at DePaul University, a terrorism expert, here on the show.